Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The sheltered rich aside, it's not an easy time out there economically for Americans today. Recession, insecurity, inflation hit everyone. But 30-something journalist Nan Mooney sees a generational dynamic at work, a generational downgrade for her and millions of 20 and 30-something Americans who, she says, are falling far behind their parents' standard of living. This hour, On Point, a generation falling behind with Nan Mooney. Joining me now from Seattle is Nan Mooney. She's a member of what she calls the professional middle class, a journalist, teacher, and author. She has a young son, a long list of financial challenges, and a new book out, Not Keeping Up With Our Parents, the Decline of the Professional Middle Class, it's called. Nan Mooney, thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Tom.
Just to get the whole picture here, you're 30-something, you've got a son who's a few months old, and you've just moved back with your parents.
I have. I am a single parent, and financially that was really the only way for me to swing doing this.
Exhibit A may be too close,
exactly.
Too close to home for you. Nan, you know, it's a time when the whole country is seeing economic challenges, no matter what people's age. But in the midst of that, you're making a generational claim. What are you saying your generation is up against that the rest of the country is not, or is it all one ball of wax?
Well, I won't say anyone is immune from financial troubles at this point, maybe a very tiny subsection of the population. But what we're seeing is that our generation, I'm talking about people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s, for us, our wages have stagnated and the cost of everything has gone up. So we're paying more for health care, we're paying more for child care, we're paying more for a college education, we're paying more for housing. And obviously, we're going to be pretty financially strapped.
I want to get a feeling for how you come at this. It's not everybody that you're talking about. You're not specifically focused on the poor or the rich, but what you call the professional middle class. How do you define that? What does that mean?
For me, that meant people who have a college education, at least a four-year degree, oftentimes a graduate degree as well, who are working in white collar professions. Oftentimes, they're in service professions. They're working in education, in nonprofits, areas like that, where you get a lot more moral prestige than high paychecks. Income levels for a family, you know, ranging anywhere from maybe $40,000 to $100,000 a year. So it's a fairly broad swath of the population. But I think the important thing is that this is a swath of the population who ostensibly did everything they were supposed to do to make it in America. We have gone to college. We have the job skills. We're employed. Yet still, we're really having trouble making ends meet.
So what's the baseline standard of living, Nan, that you're comparing this big group of Americans to and saying their parents had it, they're not going to have it? What's it?
It is being able to afford a house of your own, being able to afford to have children, being able to afford some of what we consider to be the comforts of a middle class life, being able to take vacations every once in a while to send your kids to summer camp, things that are not extravagant luxuries, but are beyond just the baseline being able to put food on the table type of living.
And where did you come from on that score? Give us a sense of your own upbringing. You're saying very loudly here that you're afraid that you and others are not going to be able to recreate it. What was yours like?
I grew up very much in a middle-class family in Seattle. My father was a sales representative for a publishing company, and my mother was a third-grade teacher. We weren't rich, but we were certainly comfortable. They owned their own house. We took a family vacation every year. I was an only child, and I went to private schools. And my parents both had health care and pension from their jobs, so they weren't responsible for taking care of that. And I feel like these circumstances are very rare now, that you can comfortably raise a child or several children on two middle-class salaries and be able to afford what my parents were able to afford.
You know, but in all decades of American life, there were plenty of people who couldn't have the things you just described in their youth. I didn't have a bunch of those things, and yet life went on. What do you think is different now?
I think the problem is that more and more people are not able to afford these things. So we really just have a small sliver of the population now who is financially comfortable. And economic inequality in our country now is higher than it's been since the 1920s. So more and more people are struggling financially, and that's going to be a real problem.
Nan, we've got listeners who are pouring in already who want to talk about this. Let's go straight to them. We've got Jessica calling from Brookline, Massachusetts. Jessica, you're on the air. What do you hear in Nan Mooney's telling of life?
Well, my parents have always been very comfortable, very comfortable. I now have my husband and I are middle class not very long ago. We both have good full-time jobs, but I pay more for daycare than I take home. But I have to stay in my job because my job has the health benefits. So I could be home a little bit more and we could be raising our standard of living, but basically we're living more than month to month just trying to make sure that I have the health benefits for my family, and it's coming out of my entire paycheck just to keep the kids in daycare so I can keep the job with the health benefits.
Jessica, may we ask how old you are?
I'm 40.
And you,
children are 2 and 4 and a half.
40 and kids 2 and 4 and a half. Do you think that maybe when you're 50 you will have caught up with your parents' standard of living, or do you think you ever will?
No. My parents are fairly well-to-do, and I feel like we are in a good, very respectable, solid working class economic category. But right now, that's not enough to live, and that's really kind of ridiculous.
And how do you feel about it? Do you feel in some way that you and your generation has failed, or that the country has somehow failed you?
I really feel like it comes down to daycare and healthcare is really sucking everything out of everybody. You have to live for healthcare. You have to work where you can get the health benefits, and whether that's a higher pay job or not. And I don't know. Some people can be very successful in business, and which is kind of my parents' generation. But for myself, I was raised to live for more than money, but you really need the money.
Nan Mooney, here's Jessica calling straight out of the heart of the group you're talking about, and her story seems to resonate directly with your theme, Nan.
Absolutely. And I think what Jessica says is really important, that we're often not, it's not just one thing that we're struggling with. If it was just an increase in childcare or just an increase in housing costs, maybe we could figure out a way to cover that. But it's everything that's going up at the same time. So we're forced to make these choices between healthcare and childcare, between, you know, owning a home or having children, between saving for retirement or saving for a child's education, because there simply is not enough money to go around.
What happened here? Why did your parents, Jessica's parents' generation, seem to have those things, and Americans today struggling to pull them together?
Well, it's a combination of factors, but wages for the middle class on down have stagnated, and the cost of everything has gone up. So we are paying more for all those things that our parents, many of those things actually our parents got were supplied by the government, at least in part, things like pension, health care that we are now responsible for paying for on our own.
And when you share these stories with friends, peers, how do you look at it? There clearly are plenty of hot shots in your generation who are doing just fine, thank you. I mean, there's, you know, all the famous stories of the whole generation of investment bankers and hedge fund managers and all the rest who seem to be rolling in dough. So what do you make of that, Nan?
Well, I mean, we could say if we all become hedge fund managers, then we're going to have a pretty imbalanced country.
Yeah.
So there needs to be a way for the teachers and the journalists and the nonprofit workers to also make it.
And you don't see it. Let's go to Mark in Panama City, Florida. Mark, you're on the air with Nan Mooney.
Yes, how you doing? The point I'd like to make is that we're in a transition period between the industrial age and the information age. And there's going to be uneven development until everybody is able to retrain and catch up and move on to the next round of jobs in the information systems, technology, and communication. And I think that's what we're seeing.
Mark, do you have any doubt that information age, it's been around for a while now, but do you have any doubt that as it emerges, it will give Nan's generation the same standard of living her parents had, or does it come with a downgrade?
No, absolutely. People will be able to catch up. The difference is that it's going to look differently than what you do to make a living is going to look differently than it did 20, 30 years ago. For example, I've been self-employed for the last 6 years. I've done very well. I've been able to pay off all my debts,
yep.
And I've been able to start my retirement account, which was nothing, and it's pretty high now. But my business is going down, and I'm going to have to jump in and get a job. So so I'm going to run my web business on the side and get a job. And I think I think for a lot of people that's a possibility with the internet and the ability to work from home and make money off of websites and be a teacher. I think you'll have to do that. Now, it sounds like two jobs, and it is.
Yes, it does.
However, the difference is that on the internet, you can make a lot of money with very little time if you hit the right stride.
Mark, we've got a break coming up here, so let me put it to Nan. Nan, is that the answer? Your generation ought to have a job and start a business on the side and, you know, juggle six plates and take care of their own kids and do the laundry. Is that the answer? Just
work, no, I don't. I hope that's not the answer because I don't, you know, we need to sleep at some point. So I think that everyone I spoke to was college educated and had a job. So I don't think it's a question of just retraining.
Do you think it's a matter of shifting gears, or do you see the country as somehow just plain downshifting economically? Maybe that's just the way it goes. Your generation, out of luck, missed the peak of the party.
Well, I hope it's a question of shifting gears. I don't want to give in to complacency and say that's, you know, that's just how it is and that's tough but too bad. I think that if we shift our priorities, we'll be able to at least more equitably spread some of the goods.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about a new generation of Americans not hitting their parents' standard of living, falling behind economically. Nan Mooney is with us. Her new book is Not Keeping Up With Our Parents, The Decline of the Professional Middle Class. Nan Mooney joins us from Seattle, where she and her young son have moved back in at 30-something with her parents. So you hear not just the book's theme, but the story in a moment. We'll hear from Peter Goslin, who's out with his big new book, High Wire, looking at the precarious financial lives of American families. But let's hear from a couple of callers first. Brian in Watertown, Massachusetts. Brian, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you, Tom?
Pretty well. What do you know, Brian?
Well, I am agreeing with the author in the 30s, and it's very difficult. I know that my parents had a little easier time. My mother was a single mother, but was still able to go own a home in the New Haven area and even, go on vacation. And me being in my early 30s in Boston, I make a very good salary. And it's very hard. I have to rent. And, you know, housing prices in the Boston market are out of control.
So hard to own a home. What about that vacation? Are you taking off for the Cape for a couple of weeks this summer, Brian?
No, I can't. And the other thing is I work at a college, and the author is absolutely correct. The price of an education in America these days is tripled, quadrupled every other year. I mean, it almost doubled the price of inflation every year, and I see that firsthand. And the debt that students come out of college with is very difficult. And, again, I agree with the author where there aren't incentives like the GI Bill, and there aren't certain things when my grandparents had it and my parents had it. It's just, I think, more difficult now, me being the early 30-something.
Brian, what about our caller, Mark, from Panama City, Florida, who says, don't worry, this is a gear shift in the society. We're moving from industrial to information age. Give it a little time. It's all going to work out great. Do you see, you know, help coming over the horizon?
Well, I mean, I do think that we live in America, and that's a great nation. And, you know, on some level, we've been shipping a lot of manufacturing jobs overseas. So I think that caller is right in the fact that we're trying to switch our learning and our growth towards the technology era. But they're in that same era. China is in competition with us, Germany, United Kingdom. I mean, we're fighting more of a global battle to keep up with the technology boom. So I still think, going to be just as difficult for even middle-class people in other countries in that era.
Looking tough even when you look ahead. Brian, thanks for your call. Let's get one more here from Jennifer in Arlington, Massachusetts. Jennifer, you're on the air.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm okay.
I'm calling because I just wanted to say that I think that this whole trend has a really significant impact on family dynamics. One of the most important things for me as a mother is to be able to actually spend time raising my child, particularly in the early years. And I had my daughter in my senior year of college, mm-hmm. When I was about 22, and about to turn 30 this year, and I would love to have another child, but it's just economically impossible because the ability of a one-income family to survive, to buy your first house, to have health insurance, to have all of these securities that you need in order to provide a stable, loving atmosphere in which to raise children are just further and further out of reach. And I really wouldn't be surprised in the long run if I see it already with my contemporaries and my peers. Most people are postponing marriage. They're postponing having children into their late 30s because of economic and financial reasons. And it's a bit of a disruptive balance, at least I feel. I mean, by the time I have my next child, my parents will be significantly older. I don't know how much of a what their role will be like in the life of their grandchildren, et cetera, et cetera.
Jennifer, it sounds like you too are right in the middle of what Nan's talking about. Nan here, Jennifer reminds us, it's not just a bottom line question about balancing the budget. It's a family dynamics issue. It's a quality of life issue. Do you see erosion at that level as well, Nan?
I think that people are making choices that they never anticipated they would have to make. And she's pointed out quite a number of them. Whether I can stay at work and have children, whether, you know, I'm going to be taking care of my older parents. We're a member of what they're calling the sandwich generation, so that we're having financial responsibilities both towards our parents who are getting older and our children, because we are having children later, because we are pushing them off for financial reasons. So it's a whole new wave of problems that our parents' generation didn't deal with.
Let's get a call from Savannah, Georgia, and Henry. Henry, you're on the air.
Well, thank you. I just wanted to call in and say that I agree with the author. I haven't read a book, but I'm looking forward to it. Today's generation, something we haven't talked about is that in our parents' generation, it was not unheard of to have a one-income family. The paradigm seems to be that you have to have two incomes just to survive. And if you are a single parent, you definitely have everything stacked against you with health care and child care and all these other things. We have a chance right now in America to talk about these things, but none of the candidates seem to be focused on the constituency, on the voters, you know, health care in particular. It's outrageous.
So you want to hear more on this front in the presidential campaign, and yet there's a lot about the economy out in that realm. Henry, when you look forward, do you feel a sense of resignation about this? Is the country just going to get used to a different standard of living, or is this just a pause? It'll come back like gangbusters and, you know, eventually keep up with the parents again or surpass them.
I do feel like that maybe there is a sense of not really complacency. A resignation would be a good term for it. It's just I don't believe that our particular outset on life right now is what our parents had. You know, there are a lot of people who feel left out. The middle class that she's speaking about, no one is speaking to their terms. Both our parties, one speaks to one extreme, the other to the other extreme. But that middle, that very broad middle, seems to be they're being attacked from all sides.
Henry, thank you very much for your call. I want to welcome another voice into this conversation, and a really great one. Peter Goslin joins us from Washington. He's national economics correspondent based in Washington for the Los Angeles Times. Has covered the economy for 30 years now. He's out with a big new book called High Wire, The Precarious Financial Lives of American Families. Peter, thanks very much for being with us.
It's great to be here, Tom.
You hear what Nan Mooney is both experiencing and writing about. She sees a powerful generational dynamic in what she's feeling as a reduced standard of living compared to her parents. Do you see this generationally, Peter, or all Americans in the same boat?
Tom, I think the trends that Nan describes for 20, 30, 40-something college-educated professionals are very disturbing. But I do not think that this is a generational story. These things are touching a wide, wide array of Americans. In High Wire, I basically argue that while we've had our eyes fixed on the considerable prosperity of the last quarter century, something else happened. And that something else was that a huge load of economic risk was shifted from the broad shoulders of business and government to the backs of American working families, and that's from the working poor to the reasonably rich, to those making several hundred thousand dollars. It's our jobs, it's our benefits, it's the cost and benefits of college education, it's our retirement savings, it's even such plain vanilla stuff as the insurance policy that if you can afford, you buy for cover your house or your car. It simply is not as protective as it used to be, so we are more exposed. But we are more exposed than we were a generation ago.
Well, Peter, let me ask you, though, Peter. I mean, maybe it affects everyone, but if you were choosing a decade in which you wanted to start out, you know, a family, a house, try to get started, get a financial life off the ground, would you choose, you know, the 60s or the decade we're in right now? I mean, if you're 50-something or older, was it easier to get started, whatever you're facing today?
You know, Tom, you could make an argument that the shape of this economy, it's sort of a rifle shot economy. They don't want you when you're young because it costs to train you, and they don't want you when you're older because you could have a heart attack. I'm not sure who has the greater burden to bear, but if you look at just jobs, for example, jobs are shorter and shakier, not just for 20-somethings, 30-somethings, 40-somethings. Just take the last 30 years. Take men. And men played the same economic roles throughout the whole period, so it's easier to make apples-to-apples comparisons. Men, in the prime of their work lives, 45 to 54-year-old, their jobs used to average 13 years a stint. Now they average 8. That's a drop of a third. And if you take older men, 54 to 64, it's an even bigger drop. So I don't in any way want to suggest that the trends that are affecting 20 to 40-something professional class of families starting out are unimportant. They're incredibly important, but it affects a much wider array of people than just that.
Nan Mooney, we're not here to set generation against generation. Peter Goslin says, look, these are trends that are making life tougher for everyone, not just the young. If you're working, maybe even if you're not working any longer even, you're up against many of the same dynamics that are putting a headwind in front of the generation you're describing, Nan.
And I would agree with Peter, absolutely. I don't think there's anyone in the population who's immune. But some of the older generation were able to get a little stowed away in savings when things were a bit easier. They were able to buy a home. They were able to put away a generous retirement. They were able to, you know, they had jobs where health care was provided and that continues. Or they're in Medicare right now. So I would say there are added challenges to the younger generation. And many of the people I talked to actually were able to get by because they could get some help from their families, from their parents, who had come of age in a slightly easier generation.
Let's go to Sandra calling from Virginia Beach, Virginia. Hi, Sandra. You're on the air.
Hi. Well, I'm in the parents' generation, and I want to agree with what a lot of your experts are saying. I think that it was easier for my husband and my generation that, you know, we both went to graduate school and have, a comfortable lifestyle. And so, you know, our children, we were able to, you know, pay not only for their college, but also to put them through graduate school.
Lucky
now,
them.
You know, my children are in basically healthcare and nonprofit type of fields. And I see a lot of what they're saying this morning. I mean, they're going to be coming out with like 6-7 years of college education and still just, you know, be in a very middle class, existence. And, home ownership has really gone way beyond, you know, the means for the professional class, you know, for people that are in their, late 20s, early 30s. And I think that there is, a huge disconnect between what people who go into certain financial fields, such as you said, the hedge fund managers or the mortgage brokers that brought us into this terrible housing crisis and debacle, and CEOs of manufacturing companies who have shipped all the jobs abroad and are laying off 7,000 workers but still are able to make $100 million themselves,
Sandra, there you are. You and your husband have done fine. You put your kids all the way through college and through grad school. Are you saying that even with that kind of advantage, it sounds like they're coming out with good grad school educations without debt, even with that strong start, which, of course, many Americans don't have, you don't think they're going to match your standard of living?
Well, not without, you know, I think a lot of help from their parents. For example, my daughter works in a, she has a graduate degree in mental health counseling, and she has a government job, meaning working for a county in an inpatient, you know, psychiatric facility in the Washington, D.C. area.
Mm-hmm.
Well, her salary is, you know, is less than $50,000 a year, and the housing prices in suburban D.C., you know, is going to make her a renter, you know, for a number of years.
Is it because you raised her in an affluent lifestyle and now maybe she's greedy? Or is she unwilling to start in that little tiny starter house that the people in your generation might have?
I think she would do that. I think that, you know, right now a huge part of her salary is just going to gasoline to get from, you know, Arlington to Fairfax where she works. I think what it is, you know, in terms of postponing marriage, I mean, her take-home salary is about enough to pay rent and gas and food, medical expenses. And yes, you know, she's saving a little bit, you know, but I see, you know, she went to college with people who come out and, you know, can get Wall Street jobs that are paying, you know, five times what her job is paying. But I'm not even so concerned with my kids because I think that they have, you know, some grounding. And unlike their friends who are coming out of graduate school with these huge, huge, you know, college debts.
Sure.
You know, their friends are looking at how many years it's going to take just to pay off graduate school.
Sandra, thank you so much for that report. Nan Mooney, how about it? Sandra looks very empathetically on her children's generation. Is that the quality of the intergenerational conversation that you hear, Nan? Do you hear boomers and older looking at 20 and 30-somethings and feeling sympathetic or afraid of the demands they may make on the parental pocketbook?
Well, I think we get a wide range. And I think we do get a lot of people who feel the dynamic that you were saying earlier that, you know, this generation is just too demanding. They have too high material expectations, and that's what's getting them into trouble. But studies have shown that actually consumer spending is not any higher now than it was in the 1970s. And the real shift that's taken place is that we're spending on things that require regular payments. We're spending on mortgages. We're spending on childcare. So if we have a tight month, we can't say, oh, you know what, I don't think I'll pay the mortgage this month. The way we could say, I don't think I will buy a new suit of clothes, or I don't think I'll go out to eat anymore. So that's putting us in a real financially strapped place.
Peter, do you see something, I don't know, turning the corner here? Can Americans who feel like they're part of a struggling generation look forward to a time when it gets better? Is there any reason they shouldn't? That's been the American story forever, it seems.
Well, I do think that 20-somethings to 40-something professionals trying to get started are having a very hard time. I think that essentially all American families up to even $200,000 are having a very hard time, even though we've gone through a very prosperous period for most of the last 25 years. We've bought that prosperity by shifting risks onto families that they had not previously borne. One of the things about this sort of notion that we ought to just get a grip and live with it. I must say that there's something strikingly un-American about that. I mean, as a people, over the course of our history, we generally have not acted like medieval peasants and the weather. We've generally taken things by the horns and tried to do something when we found ourselves in trouble.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about a new generation of Americans not matching their parents' standard of living, falling behind economically. Nan Mooney is with us from Seattle. She's author of the new book, Not Keeping Up with Our Parents, The Decline of the Professional Middle Class. Peter Goslin is with us as well. He's looking right across the age range in his big new book, High Wire, The Precarious Financial Lives of American Families. Everybody's writing about it. It seems like everybody's talking about it. We want to talk about what should be, could be done about it all. Let's get a call from Danville, New Hampshire, and Keith. Keith, you're on the air.
Yeah, how you doing? Yeah, I just think we got it wrong. Like, we're really spoiled, and we really have had so much, and we're so used to having so much. And I know my parents, they really sacrificed many years, and the whole thing about saving and getting ahead is not having so much and really saving, moving to places where you don't, you're not keeping up with the Joneses. And I admit, I'm spoiled, and I just think, you know, we just have so much in America.
So what? Buckle down. We're back to that line. Nan, you hear what Keith has to say? People are spoiled. You know, dig down. Make your own way. Don't gripe.
Well, I'm not going to say that financial irresponsibility doesn't play any role, but I think a lot of people from the middle, professional middle class on down, are looking for places to cut, and they just aren't finding them anymore. And as a consequence, they're going into a lot of debt.
Peter Goslin, you say, what, Americans don't just accept reduced circumstances like medieval peasants. That's not what history shows. But you hear Keith calling and saying, don't assume that your parents had it easy in those first decades of their family life either.
Well, that may well be true. But the fact of the matter is that American families, working families, have always walked a wire. We've always had the opportunity to fail in this country. We've mm-hmm. always been given that opportunity. But the wire is higher now, the nets are fewer, and the chances that you smack into the pavement are greater. And you may do well. We have had a lot of prosperity during the last generation, and you may be prosperous now. What I'm trying to say in my book, and what I think Nan in effect demonstrates in the stories that I've read in her book, is that if you take a tumble, it's not a little tumble anymore. It can be a real free fall.
Nan, give us a sense. You write that in your set, people talk about this all the time. It's like it's the nonstop subject of conversation. Give us a sense of that conversation about what personal finances, family finances, parents and their well-grown children, what's the tenor of it? Where are people's concerns most focused? And where do people see hope if they do?
I think people are very frightened, and I think they're frightened about how they're going to raise their families and what they're going to teach their children about how to survive financially. I got the message from my parents that if you work hard at something you care about, if you get a college education, you're going to be fine. You're going to be financially comfortable. And I wonder if I'm going to be able to teach my son the same thing. I want him to be able to pursue work he loves, but I can't guarantee that that's going to lead him to a solid financial state. And I think a lot of people are struggling with this. So it becomes much more than just a financial issue. It becomes an emotional issue, and it becomes a family issue.
You also write that you were told as a kid looking forward to life that your parents told you to do what you love, to pick a career, you know, that was something you love. Not such a focus on necessarily a big money career, but do what you love. Do you think people can, should be still giving that advice to their children beginning to look out and step out into the world?
I think it's become much more complicated because, again, I want my son to do what he loves. I don't want him to be in a job purely for financial reasons or purely because it gives him good benefits. But at the same time, I think it's important that we educate our kids about financial realities, which are that sometimes these days it's going to be much tougher if you want to be a teacher, if you want to work in a nonprofit field, if you want to do something creative or artistic to make ends meet and to understand on a personal level maybe what they can do to make that more manageable. I think, and a couple of callers have touched upon this, that it's going to be important for us to really ground ourselves in something other than money and to understand that quality of life is not about the things you have or the things you can afford, or we are all going to be miserable.
Peter, do you see younger Americans aiming at a different kind of career now, being less confident that they can follow their bliss, do what they love, and make a living at it? And what are the implications of that? I mean, not everybody can be a hedge fund manager. I don't know what kind of shape the country would be in if they tried.
Well, look, this is a classic case. I mean, what Nana's talked about in her book and what I talk about in mine in terms of college costs going up fundamentally change what a college education is. It is not a sort of idyllic exploration of life's possibilities anymore. If you just look at what the big majors are, I mean, economics is a huge major, business, huge major. When you have a price tag as big as the price tag for a four-year private school, you are basically saying to an 18-year-old or going into college, you better be pretty targeted in what you're up to, because we as your parents, or you as a student taking out loans, are going to carry a huge debt. You've got to make good. So yes, it does fundamentally change what education is about. And I might say, Tom, the thing that I think is most concerning is that I think you can make a very good argument that it doesn't buy you anymore, even if you turn out to be an 18-year-older who has an unbelievable clear-eyed vision of where to head to make the money. I think college education simply doesn't buy you the security that it once did, in large part because there is a global generation rising up in China and India who are educated. It turns out we are not the only nation with a good university system, and we are suddenly, the people who Nan talks about are suddenly in a global marketplace for professional class labor.
I want to talk answers here, and answers that are bigger than what the inside of one, VW camper where someone's living with their young family. But let's go to one of those new graduates first. Brooklyn, New York, Aaron, my note here says you're getting out of college in 2 weeks. What do you see out there, Aaron?
Hi, Tom. I'm actually graduating from Harvard with my master's in urban planning.
Hey, great.
And I'm going to be facing a lot of the issues that your guests are speaking about, but I also wanted to talk from the experience of my classes that I think part of it has to do with the way the United States has pursued its housing program, that we've built out further and further into the suburbs and created this ideal of everyone owning their own home and living in on a quarter acre with a large plot of land. And so we've gone further and further out, and as fuel gets more and more expensive, those fuel costs kick in, and also to afford housing near where all the jobs are in the cities becomes impossible for young people starting out.
So the picket fence idea with the big green lawn may not be what we should be shooting for. Do you see another way, Aaron? There you are. You're going to have a freshly minted degree. You're heading out into the world for you and your cohort. Do you see a life ahead that will have the same standard of living, whatever the housing looks like, as your parents, or will it be different? Will it be worse?
Well, I think things are going to change in a very large way because of fuel costs and because of globalization. But I think that we can make a change by building more densely and by encouraging people to live closer to their jobs, by building more local schools. I think those are changes in national policy that could have a lot of positive outcomes on the issues that we're discussing.
Aaron, good luck to you. Nan, what about it? Is part of the answer here redefining success? I mean, Aaron points to some very obvious things. If gas is going to cost $4 a gallon, $5 a gallon, who knows what, the suburban dream may not be the standard of living measure that we should be focused on.
I think Aaron makes an important point, and one of the conundrums that we're dealing with as a professional middle class is that often the healthiest job markets are in urban areas, yet the cost rise in the cost of housing in these areas means that many people with families can't afford to live in those areas. But at the same time, if we move to the suburbs, that is certainly not cheap housing, and then we add to that the cost of commuting. So yet again, we are stuck in this area with no answer. And one thing that we could do that could help middle class and working class families quite a bit is to look at how we can build more middle and low income housing in the urban areas
near where the jobs are. Let's go to Hopkinsville, Kentucky. And Bill, hi, Bill, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
I think it's a matter of physics, plain and simple. We're flooding the country with cheap labor. Our high wage manufacturing jobs have been shipped en masse to cheaper labor markets. We've got an $8 to $9 trillion debt, which therefore makes the dollar worth next to nothing comparatively to 50-100 years ago, and therefore we're facing a continuous declining standard of living. I don't think it's going to change.
We're on the down escalator. I mean, that's a pretty gloomy view for the United States of America. You think there's no way out of that, Bill?
There's always a way out. I think if we have some hard choices ahead, if we as a nation can be motivated somehow to do that, we'd have to be willing to maybe work a little bit less to keep our manufacturing jobs in here. We have to have some incentives for the companies and the corporations to keep our our jobs here and not send them to China. And we have to, I don't know, rally around something to change it.
Bill, let's put it to our panel. Peter Goslin, Bill wants to rally around something. And who wouldn't against a vision like that? I remember, 15 years ago, early 90s, there was a lot of gloom and doom about the U.S. economy. And then suddenly here came the Internet boom, and it roared in the last half of the 90s. Is it possible we're just at a low moment? The sun's going to come up on a new day, you know, the day after tomorrow, Peter, everything will look different? Or is it going to take a different kind of effort this time? If Americans want to rally around something to change this picture, you've done a lot of research. Where would you have them rally?
Well, I think that I would not have them rally around holding jobs here. I mean, in fact, I have a story going tomorrow unrelated to the book that basically says, we're the low-cost producer of steel today. We are the low-cost producer of all sorts of manufacturing goods, so that we have an industrial base that is now competitive globally.
Because the dollar's down again.
Not just because the dollar's down, because it turns out we are raw material rich. It turns out there are a lot of the organization of our manufacturing is quite globally competitive. The problem is this. The problem is that we are doing that with almost no new employment. And so what I think we need to rally around is what are the basic things that families have wanted and believe they need to raise children, to lead decent, humane lives. I don't think that we need to change our values. I don't think, let me put it this way, maybe we do need to change many of our values, but that's a separate question. We should do that of our own free will. I don't think we should be forced to change them. The basic things that families have wanted, houses, decent communities, decent schools and opportunities for their children, have been really quite steady over long periods of time. Surveys will show this. It is figuring out how to push the pendulum back so that those are available to people. And let me just say, Tom, I think some of your callers who object to what they're hearing Nan and they're hearing me say think we're talking about big government. We're talking about something vastly outside the American experience. This is right at the heart of the American experience. We have done things to make sure American families can prosper from the very founding of the nation. And it is not outside of the scope of the American experience to do something about these kind of economic problems.
Nan Mooney, you write that being angry is not nearly enough, quoting you there. We need to act, you say. We need to examine what we can do both as individuals and as a society to stop this downward spiral, quoting you there, Nan. So what's the agenda? What would you set out?
Oh, I agree with Peter 100%. I think that's not a question of getting away from American values, but returning to what we consider traditional American family values and having more social support for things like health care, like child care, housing, all those things that actually our parents did get help with in the 50s and 60s. And I think because of the changing global economy, we're seeing a different economic situation for families today, and we need more help. So I think that if we can press politically, economically, for change in increasing social benefits. And we're seeing this, you know, the economy is a big hot button issue in this election year. And we actually have a period of time right now when we can have a big influence as voters to say, these are important things to us. It's important for us to get more help with our health care. It's important for us to get help with our college tuition, with our paternal leave, and with taking care of child care. And to really, you do have a voice. All of us have a voice as voters, and we need to make that voice heard.
Peter Goslin, in a changed global economy, can the country afford those basics, the laundry list that you and Nan have just laid out there? Or is it just going to be a less rich diet for Americans?
I have a hard time believing that Americans are simply going to throw up their hands and say, I guess this is the way it is. I think that, I mean, there are clearly some things that, that people can do on their own. They can save more. But there are lots of things that we are going to have to do together. Healthcare is a classic example. I try to come at this not by proposing a particular program, but just trying to demonstrate that you can't do it entirely on your own. Healthcare is a classic example, and I'm afraid I'm intimately acquainted with it now. My wife is very ill, and this was a case where in our family we spent a few hundred dollars last year. We will spend, or there will be spent on our behalf, hundreds of thousands of dollars this year. If this is ultimately left up just to families on their own, making it on their own, what is the right level of savings to cope with that problem? We have to do this together. If we're going to cut safety nets, we got to cut them minimally, and we got to do it together.
Peter Goslin's new book is High Wire, The Precarious Financial Lives of American Families. Peter, good luck to your family. Good luck to us all. Thanks very much for being with us this hour.
Thanks.
Nan Mooney's new book is Not Keeping Up With Our Parents, The Decline of the Professional Middle Class. Nan, good luck to you and your young son. Thanks for joining us this hour.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.